May it please the Court, Justice Steele, Your Honors, Counsel, my name is Andy Carmine. I'm here on behalf of Timber Products. I'm also presenting on behalf of co-appellants Maria Newell and Luciana Gorham for Christiana Care and Berger Brothers, respectively. We have a narrow issue before the Court today, and that is simply whether or not Workers' Compensation Regulation 5.5.1 is valid, or whether it's not. The Superior Court determined in their order that the regulation, quote, drastically altered the existing statute of limitations, and therefore it, quote, significantly impeded the claimant's right to petition for compensation. Your Honors, it did neither of those things, and this is why. First, there is no scenario where the injured worker's entire claim is forever barred by virtue of missing a UR appeal deadline.
Now, why is that? What if it's the final treatment? Under that scenario, wouldn't it be barred?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by final treatment.
Or it's the very last doctor visit that the claimant wants compensation for.
If that doctor's visit is paid or denied, if a prior doctor's visit was paid, let's say they treated in October, the final visit's in November. That's going to be their final doctor's visit in November of 2012. If the October visit was paid, they have 5 years from October to file additional claims for medical treatment or for any benefits under workers' compensation. And that goes to my first point in that the statute of limitations is for the entire claim, indemnity benefits, meaning lost wages.
What if the only thing that's left is
correct.
The payment for this last doctor visit?
Mm-hmm.
If it, under your view, if it's not made within 45 days,
and the only thing that they're not allowed to petition the board for is that one doctor bill that was denied, that last visit. They can petition the board the following day for treatment for another 5 years, or for however long. It's almost infinite in that the 5 years is always extended by the last payment by the comp carrier, whether that's a lost wage benefit or a medical
expense.
But
under my hypothetical, that's the only thing that's left.
It's the only thing that's left. Then you're right. Then everything would have been paid and acknowledged up until that last doctor's visit, which now if they miss the 45 days to appeal the UR on that last doctor's visit, then technically they can't petition for that last doctor's visit's bill to be paid. Just for that one visit, though.
Okay,
that's all.
And why doesn't that contravene the statute?
Because the following day they can petition for indemnity benefits, lost wages, permanent impairment. They can petition for more medical treatment if they feel the need. They just can't get that one bill paid. And they've had the benefit of that treatment. And that's the one thing in rendered treatment that's been UR'd. The claimant's had the benefit of having the treatment. In my case, for instance, the Hernandez case, there's 40 sessions of chiropractic treatment that was performed. The utilization review received the bill for all 40 sessions and said 12 of those are compliant with the guidelines. The other 28 are rejected as non-compliant. They're outside the recommended treatment.
Can we start, as some people say, at the beginning?
Sure.
I think it would be helpful, particularly for those of us who practice law before there was any such thing as utilization review, before the so-called reform. Tell us exactly what utilization review is supposed to do and why.
Perfect. Okay. Before utilization review and before Senate Bill 1, before the reform in 2007, the way the system worked was a doctor would treat an injured worker who was under workers' compensation, an acknowledged claim, submit that bill to the insurance carrier, and the insurance carrier would either pay it or deny it. Now, they could sit on the bill for however long, really. They could deny it initially and then get their basis for denying it later by means of a doctor expert evaluation and report. But the point was the bills were not getting paid timely or at all, really. The carriers were in a position, in a great position, to take that bill in and say, I deny it because it doesn't look reasonable or it's too much money, and we'll go get our defense medical doctor to say it's unreasonable. And the claimant will eventually have to petition the board for that, and it will be before the board and litigated by the two sides. What utilization review did through the fee schedule and this UR system, what Senate Bill 1 did, I should say, is that they, number one, created a fee schedule to give the insurance carriers less to pay for each bill. And in return, they told the doctors, we're going to make the insurance carriers have to act within 30 days upon their receipt of any medical bill. So now instead of sitting on it and putting it on the side of their desk for 6 months, 30 days they have to make a call of whether to pay that pursuant to the fee schedule, the lesser amount, or they have to send it to utilization review to have an unbiased expert in that field determine whether or not that treatment is compliant with the guidelines or outside the guidelines. Now, I talk about the healthcare practice guidelines, and they're in the briefs. They're mentioned numerous times. the healthcare practice guidelines were a system created by HCAP, or the Healthcare Advisory Panel, which was made up by 17 individuals, 9 of which were doctors from the area, who determined sort of the parameters for reasonable treatment for 7 categories of treatment. Carpal tunnel, cumulative, back, neck, knee, shoulder, the common workers' compensation injuries. They determined these parameters because that way, when bills came in, instead of going to get experts to determine whether or not, paid experts to determine whether or not this treatment was reasonable or unreasonable, they decided that the utilization review system would send it off to an unbiased expert in that field who wasn't working for the employer or the claimant, and they would make a determination of whether it fit within the parameters of those guidelines. And then that way, the insurance carrier would get a decision, and the claimant would get a decision, and the doctor for that matter, whether or not what the doctor's doing to this individual is within the guidelines or outside. If it's outside the guidelines, the insurance carrier can say, sorry, we're denying this. If it's inside
it's
the
guidelines... It's really a compliance mechanism.
Absolutely. And it's the whole purpose of it, and you asked why it was introduced, the whole purpose was to streamline this system. It was getting bogged down not only in the litigation of filing a petition for each and every medical bill, it could be a prescription for pain medication. We're going to the Industrial Accident Board with a petition, experts, depositions, and 3 or 4 months before we receive a decision on every single medical bill. The board, for instance, said, we're not even experts in complex medical situations. Maybe this is better served to be viewed by experts in this field and doctors, unbiased doctors who can render an opinion before it gets before the board.
Okay, so why 45 days in the regulation to challenge a decision that says the treatment is non-compliant, therefore the carrier doesn't have to pay it?
The Senate, the General Assembly had the wherewithal to realize that this utilization review system had to be binding. The decision had to be binding wherein the insurance carrier could say, well, because this says non-compliant, I can now deny the bill with good faith. Or if it says it is compliant, I have to pay within my 30 days or else I'm fined. Because that was going to be a binding decision, the utilization review, the General Assembly said, well, it must be appealable. There must be an avenue to appeal a utilization review decision by the claimant, by the doctor, or by the carrier. All three parties are interested. Therefore, they all should be able to appeal a utilization review decision because it does have a binding effect. That appeal, it was determined by the General Assembly, should be by petition to the Industrial Accident Board, sort of unfortunately taking us back to where we started before this reform, which is now a petition being filed by either the carrier or the claimant saying, I know that the utilization review decision says this is either non-compliant or compliant, but we believe otherwise, and the board is going to decide one way or the other.
Okay. At a time to do that, right?
They could have. I think the General Assembly, if you read Senate Bill 1 and the portions we've highlighted in our briefs, while they had the foresight to say, or while they had the wherewithal to say we need this system in place, and they did a very good job framing the system in the statute, they had the foresight to say certain instances are going to arise where the administrative agency who's carrying out this procedure, this new utilization review procedure, this new Senate bill is going to be carried out by the Department of Labor. They're better to fill in the gaps where certain tweaks and remedies need to be issued through regulations and board rules in order to make the system work best.
Well, all right, but I gather that when this 45-day rule was administratively adopted, the view was that the existing workers' compensation statute, that is the statutes of limitations, didn't govern either. Well, neither of them governed this particular process. Is that fair?
It's fair in that, yes.
In other words, if this is, an appeal is not technically an original proceeding.
Correct.
Before the board.
And that's really the argument.
And, let me finish.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Not an original proceeding and therefore wouldn't be technically governed by the 5-year statute. But it is an appeal. And then the question would be, why wouldn't it be governed by the 2-year statute? That issue, by the way, is not addressed in the court's opinion. And indeed, what confuses me about the court's opinion is that she doesn't come down, that is, the trial judge doesn't come down one way or the other as to which statute, if any, applies.
I agree with you on that point, and I'll answer by saying that 2361B, which is the statute of limitations in the statute for workers' comp, Section 19, There's two parts. The first part of the statute of limitations is for an unacknowledged claim. So you're bringing a claim saying, I was injured at work, and there, it's questioned. It's denied by the carrier initially that there was no work accident at all. That's the 2 years. You have 2 years from the time you were injured to bring that claim before the court.
Which claim?
To bring a petition, an original petition, to say, I was injured. I want my claim acknowledged as a compensable claim. That's the two-year period. Right. The five-year period is the second portion of 2361. It's 2361B, which says, if a claim's been acknowledged, now we have an acknowledged claim. The insurance carrier acknowledges it as an injury on the job. You're now on the comp system. That's when your five-year clock is enacted.
The only issue is how much, right? The claim is acknowledged, but the amount of compensation is contested.
It could be anything could be contested. Anything from a lost wage payment to a medical bill to anything. In workers' comp, what
I'm
makes
distinguishing
it,
between whether the claim itself is acknowledged.
Correct.
And the situation where it is acknowledged, but the issue is what workers' comp remedy would flow.
Right.
That would be what, the 2 year or the five?
The 5 year. As long as it's been acknowledged, it's always the 5 year from then on, no matter what the issue is before the board. And what makes comp unique, I think, is that there are petitions filed throughout the life of a claim, and claims go on for very long periods of time. It's not like PI or criminal where it's very much a one and done before the board. You're before the board.
Your position is that the appeal to the full board of an adverse decision by this lower level body is neither fish nor fowl. That is, it doesn't fall within the scope of either the 2 year or the 5 year existing workers' comp statute of limitation. Is that a fair statement?
It is. Absolutely correct.
All right. Even if that's true, what is the source of the power of the Department of Labor, if that's the agency we're talking about, to create a statute of limitations that in effect has the force of statute, where the statute itself, where the statute, the workers' comp statute is not the source of that power.
Right. My answer would be that the statute created the right to appeal. So the only thing the regulation does is set a time limit on that appeal. So I would argue that we're not dealing with the statute of limitations, but rather an appeal period. And the statute, right in Section 2322.
Yeah, that has the functional effect of the statute of limitations. If you don't make it, then you don't get an appeal. Your claim is over.
But your claim is not over, and that's the point we're trying to make.
It is over if it's the only claim. And let's assume for purposes of simplification that's the only claim.
I don't see how it could be the only claim is my only answer to you.
For purposes of this argument, it's the only claim so that we can think clearly about the issue we have before us, which is a legal issue.
Right. I think we have to look at it practically in the realm of comp. And even if we work under that assumption that this is the only claim, to back up a little bit to answer that question.
It's a time bar.
It is a time bar, but only on a minute portion of a claimant's overall workers' compensation.
Well, you keep on saying that, but let's assume that it's all the claim.
So under this assumption, all we have is the utilization review decision, which was a decision on specific medical treatment that was either proposed or rendered, is the only thing left in the workers' compensation claim. At no point, my only answer will be at no point, regardless of whether the person misses that 45 days or not to appeal that UR decision, at no point is that person prevented at all by the statute or by the regulation from bringing another petition before the board at any time for anything else.
Thereby nullifying what has happened before the this review committee?
Practically, not all the way, but practically. And this is the example. In a situation where you have the rendered treatment, for instance, in my situation, 40 visits, 12 are accepted, 28 are rejected. Well, true, the claimant missed the 45 days and can't go back and get the 28 visits paid for by workers' comp. The doctor's out that money because he can't get those paid for. The claimant had the treatment. He benefited, in my argument. But he can't go back and have those 28 visits addressed and paid for by the comp carrier. That appeal period is gone for that part of the decision. However, the next day, he can bring a petition before the Industrial Accident Board to have the same type of treatment with the same physician however long into the future he wants to bring the claim for. Because he's not barred from bringing a petition.
The doctor can't collect from the injured workers' compensation patient for the 28 sessions that were disallowed?
There's nothing in the statute that allows him to, because the claimant has a document, a binding document.
There's nothing in the statute that disallows him from doing it, because if the worker remains liable, well then, this is not a clean slate. That doesn't prejudice the worker.
I would argue that the claimant has a tribunal decision that says, I mean, the UR is considered a binding decision under the statute, has a decision that says this treatment that was rendered is outside the guidelines. Therefore, it's non-compliant. It's unreasonable. It can
be
denied.
In the real world, don't patients sign documents that say if the insurance doesn't cover it, I will pay it?
I can't answer that. I don't know. All I know is that there's no avenue for the doctor to then proceed to the patient that I'm aware of and collect on something that has been deemed non-compliant by the rules. And the doctors are knowledgeable in this because they have to become certified per the statute.
Right. So you're saying that because the legislature created this process,
mm-hmm.
and it was done through, the administrative aegis of the Department of Labor, then the Department of Labor, under its inherent authority, under the enabling legislation, and combined, I suppose, with the Administrative Procedures Act,
correct,
could adopt a statute. What is in effect a statute of limitations, or a bar period for appeals? Call it whatever you like.
Okay.
What if they made it a 1-day period? They could do that, correct?
Technically, they could. I would argue that'd be unreasonable, but technically they could. I still think that the point that the Superior Court made, which is what we're arguing against today, is that it didn't affect the statute of limitations. I think that's where we have to start. Because this claim is larger than this just one decision by the Utilization Review Board.
Aren't we missing something in the history of all this? This isn't just something the representative from Hartley decided to introduce one day because she was tired of hearing complaints about workers' comp at the Hartley Fire Hall on her weekly visit to the boys. This is the culmination of a commission's work, a combination of stakeholders, the executive branch, and the General Assembly, the business community, the medical community, the insurance carrier community, to come up with a mechanism for reforming workers' comp.
Correct.
This Utilization Review Committee, at least as I understand it, is pinpointing individual treatments or procedures that doctors know about. If they're going to take workers' comp patients, they know that it's a structural basis for determining whether to offer that procedure or treatment or not, because it's either clinically advised and approved or not. Nobody says doctors have to take workers' comp patients. They take them on the basis that they understand the system that's been worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And the quid pro quo for them is fast payment.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So this concept that review of one particular procedure, do you get a steroid shot in your lower back or cortisone shot in your lower back? Is it clinically called for or not, and therefore not compensable if not called for under workers' comp? Is not some mystery, and it has nothing to do with whether there was a work-related injury, whether there's permanent partial disability,
mm-hmm.
permanent disability, ongoing medical bills for related injuries. It's a very pinpointed, isolated part of the system.
Exactly. I agree. The scope of a utilization review is extremely limited, extremely, in that it can only address medical treatment that's been completed by or proposed by a certified doctor, and it falls within one of these seven guidelines, where there's seven conditions where there's a practice guideline. And furthermore, it can't decide whether or not the treatment is causally related to the work accident. It can't make that determination. It can only determine whether or not the proposed or rendered treatment is within the guidelines as they were constructed by the medical community and other members of the community to determine whether or not it's a reasonable, not even whether it's reasonable or necessary, whether it's a compensable piece of treatment or not. That's it. And therefore, the point I think that needs to be made where the Superior Court, I think, is a little bit missing the mark on the statute of limitations analogy or connection is that nothing in 5.5.1 or Senate Bill 1 in general prevents the claimant from ever bringing another petition. Nothing. Now, granted, they have...
Help me understand this, the process, how it works in reality. The claim is submitted or is referred to this group.
Mm-hmm.
Who appears in front of the group?
I'll run down the two ways a utilization review can happen, and I think that'll explain your question, answer your question. It can either be for proposed treatment or rendered treatment, and we have both situations in the three cases, in the facts of the three cases before us today. The reality is this, in a short version of it, the claimant receives treatment by the doctor. It's an acknowledged claim. He's been treating with his doctor. He receives treatment, let's say, for a rendered treatment UR review. The doctor bills the insurance carrier. The insurance carrier receives the bill, and a 30-day clock starts ticking, whether to pay that bill or send it to utilization review. If they choose to send it to utilization review, they must deny it and then send it within 15 days. Once they send it to utilization review, that doctor receives only the medical records for a certain amount of time, 2 years at most, the medical records concerning the claimant's treatment for that claim, you know, in general. No bills. He doesn't see how much the procedure costs or how much the treatment rendered costs. He sees only the medical records, and he makes a determination, he or she makes a determination based on those medical records he's reviewed, he or she has reviewed, as to whether or not this specific bill, this
no
one treatment...
No argument by anybody, it's just a paper record?
No argument. Nothing submitted by either side,
so
counsel...
The patient doesn't, is not involved?
No. The only thing that the UR reviewer can do, which is he can do a peer review with the doctor. The UR reviewer can call the doctor and say, listen, can you explain why you believe this is reasonable or not? I'll listen to your explanation. If he or she wants to clarify something, for instance, or just wants the doctor's opinion, they can do that. Other than that, there's no interaction with, it's supposed to be a lawyerless process where there are no attorneys involved. It really is, in a perfect world, claimant, carrier, and doctor working without litigation at all. That's the intention of the system.
Educate me on something very basic. The 45-day bar period, is that part of a formal regulation that was adopted under the auspices of the APA?
It was not. It was adopted under 2322FJ, which says specifically that complete rules and regulations relating to utilization review shall be approved and recommended by the Healthcare Advisory Panel. Thereafter, such rules shall be adopted by regulation of the Department of Labor pursuant to 101 Title 29 of the Delaware Code.
Which is the APA,
which is what they use.
Was the that particular provision, the 45-day provision, mm-hmm. Subject to review and comment?
I believe it was done under the way any regulation is proposed, in which I believe the AMA guides actually call for public notice. As well as a public hearing and, yes, comment or review or anything. And Regulation 5.5.1 did more than just the 45-day appeal. There were other portions of that reg that equally could have been commented upon or changed. It changed the notice, how the parties are noticed.
Well, I understand there was a larger package.
Correct.
Is there anything in the record that reflects what happened during the comment period?
To my knowledge, there's nothing in the record, either when Senate bill was being enacted, promulgated, or when these regulations were being enacted and promulgated, that even mentioned the statute of limitations, because it was seen as such an apples and oranges scenario.
The record in this case, I think.
The record in this case, absolutely, the statute of limitations was never addressed or never contemplated for the specific reason that, much like an appeal period in workers' comp, even an appeal period in a workers' compensation situation for a board decision, if we take it out of the utilization review scenario for a moment and think of just a board decision that a party wants to appeal to the superior court, even that does not contradict the statute of limitations in that if, for instance, the carrier says we want to challenge someone's lost wages benefit entitlement, they're no longer entitled to total disability benefits. And they succeed in front of the Industrial Accident Board. And the Industrial Accident Board renders a decision, a binding decision, that says that person's total disability has now ended as of 11-1-2012.
1 minute left. Okay.
There's nothing, and the claimant misses the appeal period to challenge that decision. There's nothing in the statute that says the claimant cannot then petition the following month for a recurrence of total disability benefits. Granted, they have the burden of proving that there's been some sort of change in their condition that warrants total disability benefits, but the claim is not lost. A workers' compensation claimant always has the option to petition the board as long as they're within the ever-expanding five-year statute. So when we compare this appeal period to the statute of limitations, I really think we're trying to bridge too large of a gap in that The claimant can not only, after missing an appeal, yes.
You've gone through all of your time, including your rebuttal.
I'm sorry. Okay, I will stop then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely. May it please the Court, my name is Mike Galbraith. I'm one of the attorneys representing all three of the appellees in this case. As Mr. Carmine indicated in his opening, we do have a fairly narrow issue concerning the regulation here. The main issue is...
Can I interrupt you?
Of course.
Because I guess I at least don't know how it works all that well. You represent the claimants, right?
Yes, just.
And I assume, since there's a problem, that these claimants had some treatment or were recommended to get some treatment, and the UR committee said no. Correct?
Yes, except it's not a UR committee. It's actually a single physician
Whatever.
Reviewing it.
Okay.
But
The UR review came back negative.
Yes,
okay.
Slightly different for each of the appellees.
I don't
but.
Care. Okay. My concern is this. When that, I was told that this is supposed to be an attorney-free situation. So I'm assuming that these claimants, either their doctors or their insurance carriers or they themselves, asked for the UR, right?
Yes, actually. Only an employer or their insurance carrier can request a utilization review. For two of the claimants, for Mr. Avila Hernandez and Mr. Palomino, the utilization review was requested for treatment that had already been provided.
Right. Okay.
For
and
Mr. Munoz, it was for proposed treatment.
That's fine. What I'm concerned about is after the review is concluded, there's either an up or a down. You either get this treatment or you get paid for this treatment or you're allowed to do it in the future. Either it's okayed or it's rejected, right?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
There is a third.
What's the third?
It's called a. There are three results that could come out of UR: either a certification, a non-certification, or a partial certification.
Okay,
and
fine.
Actually, in two of these cases, we have partial.
Stop.
Yes.
I don't care about that. What I'm trying to get at is there is a decision made at the UR level. How is that decision transmitted to the claimant?
After, for all three of these claimants, but effective June 1, 2009, which is when Regulation 5.5.1 actually went into effect, that regulation added two specific components, the one that we're here for, the 45-day appeal period, but it also added language confirming that the decision would be sent to the claimant, the provider at issue, the doctor, and the employer or the insurance carrier by certified mail. Which it was for all three of these cases.
Okay, and let's assume I'm a claimant and I don't know practically anything about these things, and I get my certified mail and it says, "Dear Ms. Berger, we've said no." Am I told anything, and how clearly am I told that if you want to take this matter further, you've got 45 days?
First, Justice Berger, you would actually be in similar footing as all three of the appellees in this case.
Okay, just to answer my question.
This is
okay?
The first UR that was done in each of their respective cases, and there's no discussion or there's no talking about what they have to do for it, but each of the UR decisions actually contains a paragraph at the very end indicating that if a party wishes to dispute the utilization review determination, they have 45 days to file a petition with the Industrial Accident Board. And essentially that's mirroring the language from Regulation 5.5.1, the addition to the regulation in June 2009, a year after this whole system went into effect.
And generally, if you know, is this certified mail letter a one-page document? In other words, is it likely to be page after page after page, and then you get to the end and it says yes or no?
In each of the cases here, they vary. At least my understanding was that they get a copy of the utilization review decision, which vary in range for these claimants from about 3 to 4 pages to, I think the longer one was in Palomino, and that was about 6 or 7 pages long.
Is there a cover letter that goes with it that says?
I do not know. And only because.
Oh, fine.
I'm
just
sorry.
Go on.
All right. The reason I don't know that is because.
To me, either. The reason you don't know that's not important to me either.
Okay.
The question I have is, at the time these letters were sent by certified mail, I assume they had already filed workers' comp claims, or they wouldn't have treatment pursuant to the workers' comp claim, correct?
That is exactly right, Chief Justice.
Were they represented by counsel at the time these certified letters were sent?
Yes. Which was part of the original issue that arose in each of these cases, because of the fact that when Regulation 5.5.1 went into effect, there was no provision allowing a copy of the UR decision to be sent to a claimant's attorney, even if they were represented, which they actually were by my office at that time. And in two of the cases, in Palomino's case and Mr. Munoz's case, my office did not receive the UR decisions from our clients until well after the 45-day period had run. I believe it was a couple of months in each of those cases. In the Avila Hernandez case, Mr. Carmine did actually send a copy of the UR decision about a month after it was issued to my office.
But you're saying that that problem has been corrected now, and that you as the attorney, if you're the attorney of record for the claimant, you will get the notice at the same time the claimant does?
Yes. Okay. There was the regulation, again, 5.5.1 was amended most recently in June 2012, specifically to include the claimant's counsel as part of that mailing prospect. So,
tell us why this 45-day period is different than the 30 days to appeal to the Superior Court or our court. And let me give you a hypothetical. You file a petition with the Industrial Accident Board, you get an award from the board. Then later, you file a petition for additional compensation. And the board says no. And you miss the time to appeal the decision on additional compensation because the 30 days have gone by. You simply missed the time to appeal or contest the additional compensation decision, but otherwise you can go back to the Industrial Accident Board for whatever you want. And so what we're being told is, if you ask to have a particular bill paid and you're told it's outside of the guidelines and you miss the time to appeal, then you simply miss the time to contest that bill, but otherwise all your rights are preserved.
Yes, and if I understand your question, Justice Holland, the fundamental distinction between this 45-day time period to contest a UR determination versus the 30-day appeal deadline to appeal a board decision to the Superior Court or a Superior Court decision to this court is that the 30-day appeal periods to the courts are statutory. They're set by the General Assembly, whereas the 45-day appeal period for a UR decision is not contained in the statute. And it was only added to the regulations through the advisement of the Health Care Advisory Panel, which the Department of Labor signed off on in May of 2009.
And authority to produce regulations was devolved upon them by the General Assembly's Act, correct?
Yeah, yes, but not the authority to set a time limit for contesting
the
UR.
The General Assembly didn't get in the weeds on what the regulations should say, but devolved upon them the power to pass regulations to implement the statute, leaving them with some regulatory discretion, correct?
Yes, actually, and quite a bit of it with regards to the development of the UR program, development of the healthcare practice guidelines, which contain the seven treatment guidelines that Mr. Carmine discussed. Actually,
there was your position that this 45 days could be properly implemented by a statute, but it can't be implemented by a rule or regulation.
Yeah, that's exactly my position. To slightly amend that, it's not that it cannot be added by regulation. It's simply that the General Assembly must provide the Department of Labor the specific power or authority to set that time limit, and it's not inferred from the general language of the statute that's involved.
That's also statutory.
What is
the General Assembly has to do something. It either has to adopt a special statute of limitations to cover this type of process, or it has to specially authorize the Department of Labor to adopt a regulation setting forth a bar period for appeals.
Yeah, that's exactly
position. Either way, there's some action by the General Assembly that's required. That's your position.
Yes, and the fact that the legislative history is completely devoid of any indication from the General Assembly, either through the entire legislative process, any of the...
Is there any authority for the simple proposition that you can, the General Assembly can by statute enable a body to create regulations, but the General Assembly has to specify the authority to create a regulation having to do with the time to appeal?
I would certainly agree with that statement.
I'm asking if you have any authority for it.
Other than this court's other decisions discussing the fact that the an agency in general, not just the Department of Labor, cannot infringe or trying to think of specific language for it, limiting a party's statutory rights. So the argument that the appellees are raising here is...
Let me see if I might, for the first time, understand what you're driving at. Because you contend that this 45-day period, appeal period, is a reduction in the statute of limitations. You contend that it is a new statute of limitations, and because of that, it had to be done by statute.
Yeah, yes, actually, because of the fact this 45-day time limit, as it's being applied by the board, is abridging the claimant's rights to petition the board for a determination regarding the compensability of medical expenses, most of which was for treatment that had already been received. So it's essentially taking it back to how a petition would have been filed and a request made from the board to make a determination regarding the reasonableness, necessity, or causal relationship of medical treatment to a work injury. Before this entire system went into place.
It's your argument that the 45-day limitation diminishes rights created under one or both of the statute of limitations that exist in the workers' comp law, or is...
It would specifically just be the five-year statutory limitations period, only because...
If there were no five-year statute of limitations period, would this regulation stand?
Either a two-year or a five-year statute of limitations?
Well, you answered my question in terms of the five, not the two.
The only reason I said in terms of the five was because these claims already have to be acknowledged as compensable in order to even go through the utilization review process. So there is no...
Take your pick. Is it because of the preexistence of either of these statutes that you have a problem, or that there's an argument here, or is it because there's no inherent authority that an agency has to adopt a statute of limitations, and that has to be done, you know, as a categorical matter by the General Assembly?
Assuming in that hypothetical that there was no statute of limitations set in the statute, I still think it would reach the same result, at least with the 45-day appeal period, because if there was no statute of limitations, then technically they have greater rights than they would have with the five-year statute of limitations.
That's not responsive to the question. I asked you to assume that there was no five-year statute or two-year statute. The Department of Labor, in those circumstances, goes ahead and adopts a regulation setting forth a 45-day deadline to file a petition for review before the Industrial Accident Board.
I apologize if I misunderstood your question, Justice Jacobs. I was assuming that there...
Well, just to answer the question. Is the argument that the Department of Labor has no inherent authority apart from a specific statute empowering them to do it, to adopt a statute of limitations, or is your argument that the 45-day deadline period here conflicts with a statute that is already part of the law?
The argument is that the department did not have the inherent authority to set a limitations for it, but the fact that it set a time limit to appeal a UR does conflict with the five-year statute of limitations that's in existence. And the perfect example of that actually would be in Mr. Avila Hernandez's case. Justice Ridgely, you asked a question of counsel earlier, assuming that this was the last treatment that was out there. Mr. Avila Hernandez's case actually is very similar to that scenario because the 28 sessions of physical therapy are really the last remaining claim that's outstanding on his case. So there is no additional benefits, at least as currently that I'm aware of, that he is owed. It's simply the outstanding bill for 28 of the 40 physical therapy sessions that he had received from June through the end of October in 2009.
Let's go back to the basics in this case. As I understood what you said, in each of these situations, the claimant filed something with the Industrial Accident Board. So they're before the board, and the board made a determination, or there was a concession by the employer, that it was a compensable injury. So that's the benchmark where everyone starts. Now you go and get some treatment, and you send the bill to the carrier, and the carrier's already conceded, or there's been a determination it's a compensable injury, but the employer says, well, I'm not going to pay this. I want to send it off for review. You said unless the employer decided to do that, they would have to pay the claim in 30 days.
Yeah, right. Yes, and that's actually in the statute.
So the 30 days is in the statute.
Yes, actually, it's in the it's section 2322 capital F. If it's subsection C or D, subsection J of that is the section that actually provides for utilization review.
So that's consistent with your theme that it's all right to have time limitations, but they have to be enacted by a statute, not a regulation.
Yes, actually. And it's the prompt pay provision.
That's exactly what Pennsylvania has done, isn't it?
I'm unaware of, I'm vaguely aware of Pennsylvania's system. I know that Delaware's is somewhat similar. I know that Pennsylvania, I believe, has a fee schedule, which is another one of the main components of the entire change in the workers' comp system in Delaware.
Yes. If there were no 45-day limitation, just take that out of the case, and your client received an adverse ruling, from the initial decision-making body, which statute would govern? That is, how much time would your client then have to seek review from the Industrial Accident Board?
I believe that the five-year statute of limitations would still apply.
Because?
Well,
I thought that the five-year statute applied only when you were not before the board and there was the employer or the carrier had denied coverage.
My understanding is that the five-year statute would apply because of the fact that the claim had been acknowledged as compensable and some benefits had been paid. So the statute would be 5 years from the date of last payment of benefits. If it was an initial petition seeking an initial determination regarding the work-related injury, the two-year statute would apply for that unless and until the claim was actually acknowledged or granted. Then the five-year statute would apply for it. And in fact, Justice Jacobs, the interesting part about this entire legislative scheme is that from May 23, 2008 until June 1, 2009, there was no 45-day appeal period because the only thing that existed in the regulations was Section 5.5, which mirrors the language in the statute. 2322 capital F subsection J, which says that if any party disputes utilization review determination, they may file a petition with the Industrial Action Board for de novo review. So for the first year that this system was in place, the regulations mirrored the statute. And then in 2009, May of 2009, the Healthcare Advisory Panel amended the regulations. One was adding the 45-day appeal period. The other significant amendment was adding an additional treatment guidelines for the cervical spine. So that was the sixth guideline. And if we go back through the public hearing notes, the healthcare advisory panel's recommendation to the department to sign off on the revisions to the regulation, there is actually no mention of why the 45-day period was how it was arrived at, why they felt that they needed to have a time limit. In fact, the entire discussion contained in the legislative history and the regulatory notes it was with regards to the cervical spine guidelines. The other point I wanted to come back to was actually with regards to a question from Justice Holland earlier. You had asked specifically, what was different about the 45-day period versus the 30-day period to appeal to the Superior Court or to this court? The other, well, I think a more close analogy to the 45-day period would actually be the old Superior Court Civil Rule 16.1 non-binding arbitrations. If a claim was worth less than $100,000 when it was filed, it had to go through a mandatory non-binding arbitration hearing. If either side was unhappy with that determination, they had 30 days to file a request for a trial de novo with the court. That 30-day period to request a trial de novo was not jurisdictional and actually could be extended at the court's discretion based on a good cause or extraordinary circumstances basis. And the Industrial Action Board, particularly in these three cases, is treating the 45-day period as jurisdictional. When, in fact, the board actually has or should have discretion to extend that period for any number of different circumstances.
Does the provision give the initial body discretion to extend the 45-day period?
It does not. At least there's no specific language to that effect in the regulations, but the regulation and this time limit was actually set by the Department of Labor itself.
I take it one of the bases would be to extend it under your theory of extraordinary circumstance that the lawyers forgot to tell their clients that if you get anything in the mail connected with your claim, bring it to me immediately.
Well, for at least two of the claimants, first, we tell that to every one of our clients for it. The other thing that I know the court had some questions for it the last time we were here, and it's mentioned in the briefing and in some of the orders from the Industrial Action Board below, is that these individuals are not sophisticated. English was not their first language. This was the first UR decision to come out in any of their cases, so they'd never seen something like this. And when you consider the fact that they had been represented by counsel and that their attorney received copies of everything that the department and the Office of Workers' Compensation sent to them, either notice of pretrials, hearings, if a petition for review was filed against them. Their attorney received a copy of everything that they got, except for UR determination. Now, we noted earlier that's actually changed as of June of this year, but for those 3 years, their attorney never received a copy of it. And it was actually because of these cases with these issues coming up, we were receiving them several months after the fact, that we took a greater role in making sure that we explained to our workers' compensation clients that they need to make sure that if they get something like this, they have to bring it to us because of the 45-day appeal period.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess, or adjourn, actually.